Hi, welcome to The Voice Podcast. My name's Amy. What you're about to hear is a recording of an interview between Saskia and Forbes Top 100 environmentalist Anita Akunde. They discuss her opinion on COP and whether the big businesses will actually keep their promises.
Hi everyone, I'm Saskia, the assistant editor of Voice, and welcome back to another Instaviews. As I said last week, we were going to be dedicating November to climate change and those on the front line who are making changes, which brings me to our guest for today, environmentalist Anita Akunde, who is going to be joining us, talking to us about her experience at COP26 and just some other climate change news that we can discuss and get her views on. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, and you?
Good, it's lovely to see you again.
Likewise.
And thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. So if I can get you to start by introducing yourself and telling us a bit about your career so far.
Okay, so hi, I'm Anita Akunde. I'm 17, if she, her pronouns. I'm an A-level student primarily, hence why you can hear the noises from school. I do politics, property, economics. I'm also a climate activist. I work at Fridays for Future Digital and New Struck Manchester, making sure we have Black Indigenous people of colour at the forefront of our climate solutions. So that's the type of my work. I'm looking at amplifying Black Indigenous people of colour voices and ensuring that we also have, when we're looking at climate crisis, we also look at gender. That's another big thing. I run Girl Up Manchester. One of our big aims is making sure we move schools to provide free, reusable and sustainable period products rather than just free period products. So yeah, those are the big things I do.
It sounds like so much that you do when you're doing your A-levels as well. I didn't do hardly anything. I love my A-levels, it was stressful enough as it is. So why don't you tell us what kinds of things you've already done as an environmentalist and how did you get into that?
So yeah, I kind of got into it. It was actually through my background looking at racial injustice and fast fashion. So I was a big advocate for racial injustice when I was about 11, 12-ish. And then when I turned 13, I was like looking into fast fashion. I like had this shock about how much water and resources it took to make clothing. And that was kind of like my opener. I was one of those like, I'm not going to join the climate movement, not for me. Because I didn't see anyone that looked like me. And I thought that was really prominent. And I was kind of like, I don't think this is the space I want to be in. But then lockdown, I kind of like pushed myself into it. I'd also been doing work beforehand at FFF, but I kind of just like went into it then and I was like, oh, there are people that look like me, they just aren't on the front lines. And so I made it my goal to make sure they were. And I think that was kind of my thing, because as well as looking at the fact that we do need to stop the climate crisis in order to have an intersectional and long-term solution, we need to ensure everyone's involved, especially those who are disproportionately affected by it. So that was kind of how I moved into it. I think one of my biggest, well, my initial projects that I did was with Fridays for Future Digital, and it was a press conference with Indigenous people from across the globe. Mm-hmm. I think it's like the one that stuck with me the most, the one I talk about all the time, because we had six different Indigenous people from like everywhere, Canada, Philippines, America, and I thought it was so amazing to hear them all speak and hear how the climate crisis affects them and type of how they're doing, what the things they're doing to live alongside the planet. And that was like the golden moment for me, like, this is what I want to do. This is the type of stuff I want to see highlighted when I'm looking at the climate crisis. Yeah.
So when you got into it and you realised that there are, you know, like people of colour who are part of the climate change movement, but they're not on the front lines, did you have a hard time getting to the front and, you know, being seen in that space? Or was it quite like a smooth transition? Like, talk to me a bit about it.
I think in terms of a specific space, I kind of joined like Fridays for Future and Youth Rock Manchester. I think I was so lucky that I had such inclusive spaces around me, and I worked in such inclusive spaces to start with, and I think that really helped because I didn't feel as much of an imposter in those spaces because they were all so inclusive, and I found that really helpful in terms of getting involved and like being able to start. However, I think once I not stopped working then, but started working in other places, I think it becomes a lot more apparent, which is something I not expected, but I wasn't exactly shocked by. But I think it was a complete change to what I was used to working in the more inclusive environments I was in. Especially, like, I think it was when I started doing, like, actual kind of talks and like conferences, because I felt like there was a lot of youth washing, a lot of tokenistic like picking, and you can tell on a panel when you're like you're the only person of color and you hardly ever get asked questions directed to you. So I was like, you can start to see it then. And then again, it wasn't something that was just happening to me, it was happening to a lot of people of color activists. And I thought, I mean, this is one of the problems. This is kind of why I felt like there was no one in the movement, even though there was so many other people of color activists. I think it's really important that it doesn't happen and people are able to kind of have that space to express themselves.
Mm-hmm. And since you started from where you are now, have you seen more of a change in that?
I've seen more. At the same time, I do like to acknowledge the fact that I probably have a much more diverse kind of following. Like when the media I consume is probably a lot more diverse than mainstream media, and looking at mainstream media, it may not have changed as much as what I see. But I still do think there has been a change. I mean, at the last, not the last cop, last two cops, we had the whole scandal about Vanessa Kanasi being cut out of pictures. And I think we've come a long way from that. I mean, it's still happening. There is still people of colour erasure in the climate movement. It's always going to be a big issue. But I think we have come a much better way from back then and what, how it was happening then to now, which I think is something to be proud of.
Okay, yeah. So mentioning COP, you were there this year as a keynote speaker. Congratulations. Tell us about your experience at COP, and was it what you expected? Like, did it meet expectations or not really?
So I went to one of the COP26 side events run by the Design Council. And I think one thing that was quite unique about that COP event was the fact that it was in Dundee and not Glasgow. Hmm. And when I say this, it's to point out the fact, two reasons. So Dundee is one of 33 cities in the world that's a UNESCO City of Design, which means it's like the most sustainable city you can ever get, and it's the only one in the UK. And I think being there, compared to being in Glasgow, where a lot of activists came back really frustrated, really like down, completely changed my perspective of what COP looked like, number one. And number two, I feel like I was around people who were a lot more hopeful. So I did the Design Council, looking at how design has a part to play in the fact that designers should be at net zero, as well as asking government to do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was quite interesting to hear from other designers, here to see what they thought about it. I think it was quite hopeful for the fact that they were in a lot more positive stance. I think that was really important because when we look at the top 100 companies, they create 71% of the carbon emissions. And I think design has a massive part to play in that. So if designers are looking to be more green, we have much more of a bigger chance of getting corporations on board. So I think being at that event, doing the policy labs, looking at legislation that could be implemented was really important, because I think young people's voices in policy is not heard of and not as emphasized as it should be, especially when the policies that get put in place probably affect the young people a lot more than the adults that are putting them in place. Mm-hmm. So being those policy labs and speaking, I think, was really important, not just as a person of colour, but also as a young person. Making sure that we all do have the well-being of our future generations at heart is really important to me. And I think being able to do that in that manner was quite impactful. I quite enjoyed my experience, and I really liked the fact that it was a lot more hopeful than what I expected from COP. The rest of COP, it probably lived up to my expectations of like not getting the deal we needed, or not actually as radical change as needed to actually meet the climate target. But I do think that one side of it now, that probably it gives me hope in the right direction.
No, that's good to hear, because we had a couple of journalists at COP, but they were in Glasgow, and their thoughts and feelings were not as hopeful as what you experienced in Dundee. So it's nice to know that there was one part of COP that was actually doing something good, to put plainly. So yeah, I'm glad to hear that. So you went to Dundee this year, but did you go to any of the events in Glasgow as well, or?
I did some live streams because I literally had exams the first week of COP, which is annoying. It was like so weird. And I think people forget the whole youth, like, they're like youth activists, but they forget they're actually young people in school and doing this. And it's quite funny because people would be asking me, I'm like, oh, I had exams. They're like, exams? And I'm like, yeah. No, I was the first week I had exams, and the next week I was obviously in Dundee. But I did do some live streams to some of the events, which I found quite interesting. In love with obviously the youth marches, the solidarity show, not just in Glasgow but across the country with the youth marches happening, and a lot of the green, the events in the green zone that I watched were really good. However, again, I think the fact that the green zone events were a lot more hopeful than the blue zone, where the policy was meant to be actually happening, is quite telling for what it was meant to be. And I think a lot of young people put a lot of effort and a lot of energy into those events and making sure that it went right. And I just think the policy didn't reflect that. And I don't think the policy reflected young people at seventh. I think I was quite disheartened about that.
I did read your Instagram post where you spoke about, you know, the blue zones, and you feel like, so for people who don't know, the blue zones is basically where the talks between all the corporations were happening, and the green zones were more the protests and the young people and the activists and stuff. You said that you felt more hopeful about the stuff that you heard and saw in the green zone. So as a young person, like, do you believe that big corporations are going to make an effort, or will the power of change lie with today's youth and those in the green zone?
I have no faith in corporations, and I think I'm quite open about that. They have had a lot of time to change and move away from those ways. And when we look at COP26, the fact they had the highest amount of delegates was fossil fuel companies. It's quite telling to see who's being prioritized and whose, like, profits and opinions are being listened to. And I think that in itself shows that clearly they don't actually have any plan on changing. And I think people get that businesses, their main objective is to maximize profit, and if that means putting people below that, I think they will. And I don't think they're yet at a stage where they care enough about the climate crisis to actually change it. I mean, you see a lot of, with really expensive products that are like the about the same amount of like carbon emissions, just wooden, and I think that isn't what people think it is when they think it's like corporations moving on and being better. It's not. It's just them selling you another product for a much more expensive price. And I think the problem is overconsumption and production, and not the fact that we don't have green alternatives. So I think I don't have that much faith in corporations, and I think it will lie in the power of the youth, but I don't think the youth are yet acknowledged enough or respected enough.
Yeah. No, absolutely. What can people, because I know, like, obviously if we really want to see big changes, the corporations need to be the ones to make those moves, but what can everyday people do to help with the climate crisis?
So I would say start small. I think it's quite easy to get really overwhelmed about the severity of the climate crisis and the whole doom and gloom message, but that doesn't help people. So I would say start small. Consuming less meat, that does not mean vegetarian, it just means maybe cutting out meat from two meals out of the five you have. And also looking at thrifting, looking at secondhand clothing, Depop. I mean, sometimes Depop can scam you, but Depop, and making sure that you kind of make those ethical decisions. They don't have to be buying something new that's really like eco-friendly, but it could be reusing something. I've got this thing where all my like flower vases are actually plaster jars that have just been washed out. And I think making those small changes to your carbon footprint, using less water, obviously, makes you feel better about yourself and be more empowered to make more changes. And then obviously moving up, make sure you hold your MPs accountable, write them emails. They have to reply to you if you live in a constituency, making sure that not only you're doing good for yourself, make yourself feel better, that you're putting pressure on your MPs so that they put pressure on government and so on and so forth.
No, those are some good tips. I'm gonna maybe post them on our story afterwards, like five ways Anita Akande says you can do better for your environment. So moving on from climate change slightly, I just want to talk a bit about you. You've accomplished like so much already and you are 17. What's next? What are you doing next?
Well, I've got a few things. Well, the biggest thing I probably say right now is, again, I've had to put my studies first, so uni. Hopefully, I'd like to study politics, philosophy and economics at hopefully Oxford or any that takes me. But also, I've got a lot of other things coming in the pipeline, which I'm quite excited for. Hopefully, we're looking at a poetry book. I'm also looking at other things with Girl Up Manchester, moving to having big conferences. So yeah, there's a lot of things that are kind of whirling in my mind that need to be put down and started. Looking at having a curriculum pack on climate education that can be used at schools. But yeah, a lot of things going on, very hectic, but they need to be prioritised. So yeah, that's hopefully what's next for me.
I mean, I have no doubt that any university will take you. And like, I've spoken to you twice, but I know like the things that you do, and I have no doubt that you'll get into wherever you want to. And as far as the poetry book goes, hit me up when it's out, okay? Because I want to read that. So last thing to ask you then, Anita, is there any advice that you have for young people who are looking to get into environmentalism and start supporting their environment and other activists?
My first thing is always join Fridays for Future Digital wherever you are. We're international, so literally come join us. Making sure you look at your local youth strike group. They usually have loads of work that needs to be done, even if you can't join the strikes. Social media, it's a great experience as well. Also making sure, even sometimes it's a bit daunting to join the groups, doing some reading, making sure that you're up to date and can educate other people, even if it's just your friendship groups or families, making sure you're reading and you're keeping up to date on those things is really important. And again, there's kind of small changes you can make in general about switching to reusable things, making sure that we reuse everything we have till like it's broken. I think those are really obviously important things. So yeah, I think that, and also your voice is powerful. Use it. I think it's really important that young people find the power in their voice, which I think a lot of young people don't. But I think it's really important, and they actually do use it. Hold their MPs to account, to hold the people around them to account, and to hold themselves to account, because it's our world and it's also going to be in our hands to fix it.
I do have to say as well, the next time you make a vase out of a pasta jar, I want you to film it and send it to me so I can put it on our Instagram.
Cool.
And everybody, you can find Anita at Anita Okunde on Instagram and on Twitter as well. Do you have a website or anything else that you want to plug before we sound off?
No. So yeah.
No worries at all. Anita, thank you so much for joining me today and for talking to me about this.
Today's episode was made possible by Voice Magazine, an online platform for young people interested in art and culture. You can read Voice over at voicemag.uk and find it on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook as VoiceMagUK. The Voice contributors are also on Instagram over at voice.extra. If you're looking for another podcast to listen to, the contributors release the Voice Extra podcast every Saturday, where they talk about the pieces they've produced and the culture they've been enjoying. If you like this podcast, please consider helping us to make more with a donation of any amount at voicemag.uk/donate. Thanks to Kevin MacLeod for use of the track Thief in the Night. You can find more of his work at incomputech.com. Tom Innes was the executive producer and Amy Kuhler was the editor.